Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 8, Text Number 37. Nuname Bhagavan Krito,
Nuname Bhagavan Krito,
Vishokena Pikamana,
Vishokena Pikamana,
Nirvedo Yam Durashaya,
Nirvedo Yam Durashaya,
Nuname Bhagavan Krito,
Nuname Bhagavan Krito,
Vishnokena Pikarmana,
Vishnokena Pikarmana,
Nirvedoyam Durashaya,
Nirvedoyam Durashaya,
Janme Jata Sukhavaha,
Janme Jata Sukhavaha,
Bhagavan Krito,
Nuname Bhagavan Krito,
Vishnokena Pikarmana,
Vishnokena Pikarmana,
Nirvedoyam Durashaya,
Nirvedoyam Durashaya,
Yanme Jata Sukhavaha,
Yanme Jata Sukhavaha,
Nunam,
Nunam,
undoubtedly,
undoubtedly,
may, with me,
with me,
Bhagavan,
Bhagavan,
the Supreme Lord,
Vritaha,
is pleased,
Vishnu,
the Personality of Godhead, Kena Api,
by some,
Karmana,
activities,
Nirvedaha, detachment from sense gratification. I am
this.
Durashaya,
in one who so stubbornly
hoped
for material enjoyment.
Yet, because
me,
in me,
Jataha,
it has arisen.
Sukha,
happiness.
Avaha,
springing.
Translation.
Although I most stubbornly hope to enjoy the material world, somehow or other, detachment has arisen in my heart, and it is making me very happy. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, must be pleased with me. Without even knowing it, I must have performed some activity satisfying to him. Text number 38. Maivamsho manda bhagyaya klesha nirvhita hitavaha yanano bandham nirhiricha purusha samam richati. A person who has developed detachment can give up the bondage of material society, friendship and love. And a person who undergoes great suffering gradually becomes, out of hopelessness, detached and indifferent to the material world. Thus, due to my great suffering, such detachment awoke in my heart. Yet how could I have undergone such merciful suffering if I were actually unfortunate? Therefore, I am in fact fortunate and have received the mercy of the Lord. He must somehow or other be pleased with me. Text 39. Teno prakritim adhaya sirasa gramya sangata chakra jurasa saranam Brajami tan adhisvaram. With devotion, I accept the great benefit that the Lord has bestowed upon me. Having given up my sinful desires for ordinary sense gratification, I now take shelter of Him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 40. Santushta sadadhachittat yata labhinna jivati viharam amunarivaham atmana ramanenat vai. I am now completely satisfied and I have full faith in the Lord's mercy. Therefore, I will maintain myself whatever comes of its own accord. I shall enjoy life with only the Lord, because He is the real source of love and happiness. So this is actually a very famous portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a Sanskrit verse that disappointment gives rise to the greatest satisfaction. And these sentiments, which are stated by Pingala, they're very, very ancient. These are very, very ancient. This is a very ancient story, and therefore we see in the pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna that even the gopis actually quoted these statements of Pingala. The gopis, there's one verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 47, text number 47, where the gopis actually are discussing amongst themselves due to Krishna having separated from them, and they are quoting, they are saying that the greatest happiness is to renounce all desires. And they give the example of the story of Pingala. Of course, they say it there. They actually say, we know this, but still we cannot give up thinking about Krishna. So... this particular sentiment of Pingala, it works in a material sense, that in the course of material life, when there is suffering, that suffering results because we have hopes to enjoy in the material world. We have various material desires, and there is the hope that if we fulfill those material desires, then we will become happy. So that's sort of hope against hope. Because even though in material existence, everyone is trying to fulfill different material desires, trying to satisfy different material desires, and they're hoping against all hope that that will bring happiness. But what we see is that the result actually is that people get distressed, they get misery, they're put into illusion and lamentation. So many negative different results happen. Although people take their suffering, people take their suffering as happiness, just like Srila Prabhupada gives the example that a person will work very, very hard. And from working very hard, they will get some money, and then with that money, they will purchase something. So they believe when they get that money that now I'm happy. But really, all they've done is just work very hard, which is a distressful situation. You know, no one likes the no one sort of bounces out of bed in the morning and you know, it's just let me go and work hard all day, you know, for my boss, let me just look at this computer screen all day and put all the bits and bytes in the right pieces and what have you. I just can't wait to just, you know, look at every little detail on this computer, or, you know, dig this hole, or hold this sign up, or, you know, people don't, that's difficult. People would rather, you know, do anything else, sit on the beach, you know, have something nice to eat, spend some time with their friends and their relatives, what have you. But, so people work very, very hard, and they get some money and they think, now I'm happy. But actually, you know, it is just a whole process of suffering and difficulty and struggle and obstacles. But they are taking that suffering condition that now I'm happy. So trying to fulfill a particular, any material desires in the material world brings with it all sorts of suffering. But people hope, against hope, that somehow if I continue down this path, even though I'm suffering, trying to get happiness, there's a whole lot of suffering trying to get happiness, and when I get a little bit of happiness, it gets taken away. That hope brings with it suffering. Better to be utterly hopeless. If one is completely hopeless, then one has a chance of being happy. So hope against hope, that is a cause of suffering, and utter hopelessness, that brings happiness. So this is the sentiments of Pingala. You know, she was hoping that by, you know, oh, this man will come. I'm standing here all day, you know. So that's not happiness, she knows. Standing, waiting, you know, this man will come, and there's anxiety, when will the money come? And then it gets cold and it gets dark, and still you're waiting. That's not happiness. It's just increasing her suffering. And then she gave up. Utter hopelessness. This will never make me happy. And then all of a sudden she felt, now I'm becoming happy at this. So this is the story. So the gopis, they actually remember this particular story told by the Avaduta Brahmana. And you know, one gopi is saying to the other gopi that, you know, Krishna has gone and there is no hope that he will ever come back. So just give up that hope. And another gopi is replying, yes, that's a fact. Actually, if we give up these desires, that somehow we'll be happy because Krishna will return. If we become utterly hopeless, like Pingala, then maybe we will be happy. But another gopi says that, you know, the difficulty is that Pingala was able to do that because she was able to give up ordinary, insignificant men. But we cannot give up Krishna. That is the problem. Krishna is always in the gopis' thoughts, and they describe Krishna as being sweeter than sweetness itself, and therefore they cannot give him up for a moment. So that story, of course, is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna had sent Uddhava to Vrindavan because the gopis were feeling extreme pain and suffering because of their separation from Krishna. And Krishna sent Uddhava there with a message in order to console the gopis. So when Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, the gopis saw Uddhava and they could see that Uddhava looked very much like Krishna, and they could understand that Krishna must have sent his very dear friend in order to help them and therefore they took Uddhava into a very secluded part of the groves of Vrindavan so that they could speak with Krishna, with Uddhava confidentially. And they began to discuss with Uddhava that Uddhava saw that the gopis were crying very loudly, and they were so absorbed in their feelings of separation from Krishna that they were just crying and talking very, very loudly without any shame or embarrassment. And Srimati Radharani, of course, she saw one bumblebee, and she was it made her remember how Krishna was like this bumblebee, that Krishna was going from the various women to women in Mathura, just as a bumblebee goes from flower to flower. So Radharani is speaking that Krishna has enjoyed with us, and now he has gone with some other women in Mathura. And then of course Srimati Radharani began to glorify the great fortune of the women of Mathura, that now Krishna is there, they are able to enjoy with him, and she was condemning their own misfortune, how they no longer have Krishna. So in this way, condemning themselves and glorifying the women of Mathura, Radharani in actual effect was simply glorifying Krishna in all his various wonderful characteristics. And Srimati Radharani was saying that although Krishna has abandoned us, we cannot forget him. So this is the context in which the gopis are speaking this verse. So actually Uddhava then spoke the message to the gopis that Krishna had sent them, and of course Uddhava was glorifying the gopis that you were thinking yourself unfortunate, but actually you were the most fortunate. Actually this is one of the symptoms of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is that when real love develops, the devotee actually thinks that they do not have any real love, and because of their lack of love for the Supreme Lord and lack of good qualities, therefore the Supreme Lord has neglected them and abandoned them. So this is the feelings of the gopis. In the beginning, of course, the beginning of love for the Supreme Lord is that one actually feels the opposite. One actually feels that one is very, very fortunate. So this is one of the mysteries. Devotional service is sometimes very difficult to understand, because in the beginning, when one is actually making advancement in spiritual life, one begins to see everything as the mercy of the Lord. Whatever happens to this, as you see here with this story of Pingala in this verse, that she is feeling because her love for the Supreme Lord is being reawakened, that even the suffering that she is undergoing, she must be very, very fortunate. Because it must be a direct indication of the Lord's mercy, that her happiness, her detachment from the material world is developing. Because we see that in the material world, millions and millions of people, everyone suffers. Everyone suffers in the material world. And it doesn't matter whether one is a pious person or an impious person. We generally think of suffering as the domain of the impious. But actually suffering is also for the pious. Because Actually, the whole material world is a place of suffering. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. If someone is very pious, they can become very wealthy. They can become very attractive. They can become very well educated. They can have high birth. But whether one is pious or impious, when you're ill, you still suffer. Huh? it doesn't matter how wealthy you are. You know, if you are very ill, you will still suffer just the same as a poor man. And it doesn't matter how learned you are. When you're hungry, you still get the same pains of hunger and thirst. You know, you stub your toe, you kick your toe. It doesn't matter. Old age is still just as traumatic. No one wants to get old. In one sense, for someone who has more to lose, then old age is even worse. You know, for sometimes we see that actresses and models who, you know, have made a career and always been glorified because of their beauty, when they become old, it disturbs their mind. They become almost insane, and they will do anything, you know, to try and keep that beauty. There's one song by Janis Joplin, who's a bit of a famous blues singer in the West, and she had one song, Bobby McGee, and in that song she sings that freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. There's another song by The Doors, that I've been down so low that everything looks like up for me. These are the different sentiments. But when you have something to lose, it is worse in one sense. So although everyone suffers, only very rare people actually develop a proper sense of detachment, and their love for the Supreme Lord actually begins to awaken. That's actually the special mercy of the Lord. That's here, you see that Pingala is describing that somehow or another this detachment from the material world has developed in me as a result of disappointment, and therefore I'm renouncing all material desires and becoming happy. So she can appreciate that is something special. Everyone is suffering, but we don't see, generally, people in this material world, when they suffer, at first, because they're so stubbornly determined to enjoy in the material world, they just try harder to fulfill their material desires, or sometimes they just become more sinful in their methods. Or they increase the level of sense gratification to a very, very degraded level. What is very rare is that when someone actually undergoes some difficulty in life, that by the Lord's grace, due to some agyava sakriti, some activity that they had performed in a previous life, somehow they had pleased one of Krishna's devotees or offered something to one of Krishna's deities, something. They please the Lord, and therefore the Lord gives them the reward that when they're suffering, he simultaneously revives within their heart some knowledge and detachment and appreciation for understanding the comparison between the material world and the spiritual world. So that is the great mercy. So here we see that Pingala is appreciating this great mercy. But although everyone is suffering, still she is getting some special benefit from that suffering which is very, very rare. So that is the beginning of devotional service. One actually begins to appreciate that everything is the mercy of the Lord. Even the difficulties and the problems. So one feels very, very fortunate that the Supreme Lord is blessing me like this. As one makes further advancement, one begins to feel that I'm very unfortunate. I am completely neglected by the Lord. I have no love. I have no piety. I have never done anything good for the Lord, and therefore He has completely abandoned me. So these are the sentiments of the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. Appears to be a contradiction. Because in the beginning, the mood that to appreciate one's good fortune, that everything is the mercy of the Lord, that increases one's love for the Supreme Lord. Then Krishna, He wants to increase that love to an even higher pitch. And therefore, He sometimes appears to abandon the devotee. He sometimes appears to become separated from the devotee. This is the mystery of devotional service. Of course, there are many people who won't worship Krishna because they actually feel that, you know, if they worship demigods or Shiva or Brahma or this one or that one, they can perceive how they're getting some direct material results, and they can feel the presence of that demigod bestowing so many benedictions upon them. I am praying for this, and yes, I got exactly what I wanted. But they're scared to worship Krishna because they know, they see that, you know, these devotees have worshipped Krishna, and when they completely depend on Krishna, Krishna will abandon them. Like this. So the fact is that Krishna actually does that, but it's only apparent. Krishna doesn't actually abandon His devotees. He's right there, but He works in such a way as to increase the mood of love for the devotee, and He does that by when they feel a little bit abandoned or separated, then that love which is there intensifies. So this is actually the message that Krishna gave to the gopis. He was saying to them that although you do have love for me, there's no doubt, but to increase that love, I have actually separated from you. And He gave the example that just as the wife, when her husband is away from home for a long period of time, she just naturally begins to think of him more and more all the time. When the husband is there all the time, she never gives him a second thought. Did you say something? Was that? But when the husband goes away, she thinks from morning till night about that, or when he will come back. And we used to do this together, and we walked in this park, and I can remember his sweet voice. And that's actually very natural. And Krishna knows this, and therefore He sometimes separates. So then He actually said to the gopis that because you will then always intensely remember me, then you will immediately attain me without delay. So that although Krishna appears to be separated, in fact he becomes more intensely present. Of course, in the material sense, when we are separated from someone, although we may think of that person, you know, they are not actually able to be personally present. When we think of Krishna, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is fully present within that remembrance of the Supreme Lord. He is non-different from his name, his fame, his glories, his pastimes. So when we intensely think of Krishna, he becomes intensely present to the devotees. And that intense presence of the Supreme Lord in a mood of intense love is actually the highest transcendental pleasure. So therefore, later Uddhava glorifies the gopis like this. Actually, after the gopis give this, Uddhava gives the message to the gopis, then Uddhava says, after Uddhava gives the message to the gopis reply to Uddhava that Krishna, he must be happy now in Mathura, now that he has killed Kamsa, he'll be able to enjoy with all the residents in Mathura there, his relatives and the various women, without any restriction. As we know, Krishna previously, you know, the thought of going to Mathura, Kamsa was trying to kill him. Now Kamsa is dead, the gopis are thinking he will be able to stay there. He has so many relatives who love him so much, and all the beautiful women, very sophisticated, so, you know, more qualified than we. So they are thinking like that. And, you know, these thoughts that, you know, in that sense, you're saying that he will return, but do you really ever think he will return? So, it was in that mood that they actually spoke this verse, that it is better that we give up all hope of Krishna returning, because then we have some chance of happiness. But then as soon as they said that, then they said that even though we think like that, it is not possible for us to actually, you know, stop thinking of Krishna, because everywhere we go in Vrindavan, we see the signs of Krishna's lotus feet, and then we, you know, we see something and it reminds us of Krishna, and then all his pastimes and all the wonderful things that we did together, they all come flooding back within our hearts. In this way, Krishna has completely stolen our minds and hearts, and we cannot think of anything else but Krishna. So this is the mood of the gopis. So Uddhava, he actually remained there for several months, and he would speak different things about Lord Sri Krishna in order to pacify the gopis and in order to increase their transcendental pleasure. So therefore Uddhava, he went, when he returned to Vrindavan, he actually glorified, when he returned from Vrindavan to Mathura, he glorified the gopis as being the greatest devotees, because their intense ecstatic love for Krishna has, you know, no comparison. Their mood of love for Krishna is completely pure, completely selfless, and it is so intense and so powerful and all-encompassing that there is no one who could compare with the love of the gopis. So their mood, actually various Vaishnava poets, therefore they also glorify these pastimes and the mood of the gopis as the highest sentiments of transcendental ecstatic love for the Supreme Lord. we have the writings of personalities such as Bilba Mangala Thakur, who wrote the Krishna Karnamrita. He would meditate upon the mood of Srimati Radharani, and various statements of Srimati Radharani would appear within his mind, which he would then write in his book. Actually, there's a nice verse here, which is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also used to meditate upon the writings of Bilba Mangala Thakur, which delved into this very confidential mood of Srimati Radharani in her feelings of separation from Krishna. So he was remembering one verse from Bilba Mangala Thakur's Krishna Karnamrita, and he recited this verse. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, so this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila 1751. Alas, what shall I do? So this is actually something that's originally spoken by Srimati Radharani. Alas, what shall I do? To whom shall I speak? Let whatever I have done in hopes of meeting Krishna be finished now. Please say something auspicious, but do not speak about Krishna. Alas, Krishna is lying within my heart like Cupid. Therefore, how can I possibly give up talking of him? I cannot forget Krishna, whose smile is sweeter than sweetness itself, and who gives pleasure to my mind and eyes. Alas, my great thirst for Krishna is increasing moment by moment. So, in this verse, you see that there's an analogy that's given to describe this mood of transcendental ecstasy. Sometimes some very expert cooks, they make a chutney, which is particularly tasty and very, very sweet, but also very, very hot. So it's so hot, you can't really eat too much. It's so sweet and tasty that you can't stop eating. So this is the mood of Srimati Radharani. But she's thinking, I can't not think of Krishna. If I don't think of Krishna, then I'll die. Just like a fish that's not in water. A fish must be in water. Without being in water, it has no existence. So Radharani, Krishna is her entire existence, everything. And to not think of Krishna, who she loves so dearly, that is like death. But then she thinks, but if I do think of him, and I remember Krishna, then my desire for Krishna doubles, and then I am in twice as much pain, twice as much suffering. So, in this way, Srimati Radharani is in this state of divine transcendental madness, on the brink. What shall I do? What shall I say? Who do I talk to? Should I not think of Krishna? No, that will be death. Should I think of Krishna? Now that will be twice as painful death for me. Like this. This is the state of Srimati Radharani. So although Pingala, she can, one can give up attachment for ordinary men and women in this material world, like Pingala. And the gopis are saying that, yes, certainly to give up all desires, that will be happiness. There will be some peace and happiness. But that is possible, on the material platform, but when it comes to Krishna, that is not possible. It is not possible to actually, even though there may be some hopelessness, will I ever attain Krishna? Will I ever get, to the stage of Prema Bhakti? Will I ever, perform pure devotional service? these desires are within the devotee's heart, and sometimes it appears completely hopeless. I will never get there. Maybe I should give it up. But on the material platform you can do that, but on the spiritual platform it is impossible. And we see even sometimes devotees in hopelessness of their spiritual life, sometimes they feel like that, a little hopeless. I will, you know, not be able to, you know, achieve success of my spiritual desires. And sometimes in disappointment they can try to give up thinking of Krishna, but they cannot. There's so many different stories of devotees who have somehow gone away and tried to stop thinking of Krishna, but you cannot stop thinking of Krishna. So on the spiritual platform it doesn't work. So this mood of feeling sometimes very, very fortunate and very much blessed by Krishna, and then sometimes to be followed by a feeling of being completely abandoned by Krishna. These are the different moods that sometimes, you know, devotees will undergo. Someone from an outside perspective may see, devotees appear to be suffering. You know, maybe I'll work with Ganesh or, you know, Kali or someone, but not Krishna. I see the gopis, the devotees, sometimes they feel completely protected and then they feel abandoned. You know, why would I want to become a devotee? So they feel that they are seen from a material perspective, but actually those sentiments of the devotee are actual transcendental ecstasy. An actual devotee doesn't suffer. An actual devotee is seeing everything that's happening to them in Krishna's reciprocation. And a devotee always knows that, by Krishna's transcendental arrangement, that sometimes Krishna appears to be present, sometimes Krishna appears to be withdrawing, but Krishna is doing this just to increase my love for him. And when I pass that test, Krishna always rewards his devotees. We see that. Many, many different pastimes. Krishna always tests his devotees, everyone sitting in this room. Anyone who becomes Krishna's devotee, Krishna will test them. But the devotee's ecstasy is that, yes, I will, because I love Krishna, I will pass that test happily. And by passing that test, then they know that actually Krishna, he does love me, and therefore he will give the reward. And that reward, of course, is an increase in more pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is the devotee's ecstasy. So at every step, the devotee is actually seeing that whatever is happening, Krishna is always rewarding the devotee with more and more advancement in pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the devotee is always in ecstasy. Materially, what happens is inconsequential. But the devotee is always transcendently ecstatic because they understand that this is the way that Krishna deals. They know that because Krishna deals like that even with the gopis, even with the topmost devotees. That is his nature. So from an external point of view, people may, you know, look at the devotees and be a little fearful because they're seen from a material perspective. Sometimes people would even see Srila Prabhupada and they would say, you know, that Prabhupada, you know, you look so morose. And Prabhupada, you know, would say something like, you know, you do not know what is ecstasy. And we see Srila Prabhupada was tested to the limit. You imagine Srila Prabhupada, he's given up everything. He's nearly 70 years old. He's got on the Jaladuta and he's heading across the ocean to an unknown, you know, world, to spread Krishna consciousness, and then he's struck down by a heart attack. You imagine, you know, that how you might feel abandoned. I'm doing your work. You know, I've given up everything. I am completely, you know, I have no one to protect me, no one to maintain me, and you struck me down with a heart attack. See, it doesn't matter. You know, Krishna, actually, the greater the, sometimes the, just like a spiritual master will not chastise severely a disciple unless he thinks that they are, you know, advanced. Because you know, that is, if a spiritual master chastises a disciple very strongly, well, there can be two reasons. Sometimes because he feels that they are advanced and this is, he can test them, and sometimes because they're a great rascal. For instance, Shyamananda Prabhu. I think it was his spiritual master. Yes. His spiritual master beat him severely a few times. I think once he was in Srimad Bhagavatam class, and his spiritual master was speaking, and you know his attention was distracted. He might have spoken to someone beside him, and I think you know the spiritual master got off and beat him, you know, kicked him. Pay attention when I'm speaking Srimad Bhagavatam class. Another time later on, there was some dispute about rasa, and Shyamananda really copped another severe beating. But and he accepted that, of course, with as the greatest mercy. my spiritual master is fully accepting me as a surrendered disciple. That's the greatest compliment. That, you know, that's the greatest praise that he could ever give. You know. But a spiritual master, of course, won't do that. You know, a spiritual master can be very careful, even say a few harsh words to a young disciple whose faith is very pliable. You know, don't do that. Oh, God! You know. So, in the same way, Krishna will also, you know, the test that was given to Srila Prabhupada, because he is the greatest of devotees, then, you know, he can give the greatest of tests. Which Srila Prabhupada passed with flying colours. You know, we just look at the whole life of Srila Prabhupada. It was just unbelievable that anyone could just maintain undeviating faith in Krishna, just being tested to the absolute last limits of his life. And then Krishna said, yes, I've tested you enough. Now the reward. Now you go and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world like this. You know, and for a devotee, that is the reward, that unlimited service and to be counted, you know, as Krishna's servant. That Krishna has acknowledged, yes, I am his servant. Now I am happy. You know, other times, someone may be chastised because severely because they're actually a great rascal. That also happens. We see that in the life of Ramchandra Puri, that this particular verse spoken by Srimati Radharani, which was meditated upon by Bilba Mangala Thakura and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this sentiment of service to the Lord in separation, that even though the Lord appears to abandon one, it only increases one's love. That very high level of devotional service was especially found in the conjugal mood. It was not actually understood from Madhvacharya, all the acharyas down to Lakshmipati, just before Madhavendra Puri. They actually did not preach or manifest understanding of that concept of devotional service, and therefore you'll find that in many of the sampradayas, there are many Vaishnavas throughout the world, those who follow Madhvacharya or Ramanujacharya or Vishnu Swami or Nimbarkacharya, still they do not understand this, these very, very elevated stages of devotional service. But it first took seed in Madhavendra Puri. And then through him, through to Ishwar Puri, and then became fully manifest in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then it has come only in this line from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this understanding of this elevated stage of devotional service. But when Madhavendra Puri was actually on his deathbed and he was leaving the planet, he was also quoting this verse. Krishna, what will I do? Where will I go? So he was, and his disciple Ramchandra Puri, he came up and he was saying, "You're supposed to be on the level of Brahman. You know, you're supposed to be off the bodily platform. Here I see you are suffering and lamenting like a fool. Give up this lamentation and meditate upon your, you know, spiritual existence." Like that. So, Madhavendra Puri chastised him severely. "Get out of my sight, you rascal. Don't ever come back before me again. Go away. I never want to see your face again." So he becomes very... So there's an example of sometimes a very strong chastisement, not because one is advanced, but because one is such a rascal. So here is the spiritual master leaving the world, meditating upon the, you know, the mood of Srimati Radharani, and some rascal comes up and tells him to meditate upon Brahman and stop being a rascal. Disturbing. So actually, you know, sometimes the life of a devotee, seen from a material perspective, can be very, very bewildering to understand. But amongst the devotees, they understand that Krishna is always very mercifully helping a devotee to increase their love and increase the intensity of their love of God to the highest, most perfect, purest, ecstatic platform, and that is actually the life of a devotee. Therefore, although Pingala may give up material desires, a devotee can never give up their spiritual desires. I'll leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments? So we come in the line of Madhvacharya. The followers of Madhvacharya are called Tattvavadis. Where the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are called the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He does that to distinguish that there is a distinct difference. Although we're in the same disciplic succession, we accept all of the conclusions of Madhvacharya up to a certain point. There's a certain point where Madhvacharya, his teachings stop at a certain level, and he says that there is nothing beyond that. So as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we disagree with that. Therefore, they are known as Tattvavadis, and we are known as, Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So the followers of Madhvacharya, they understand that to worship the Lord within the Varnashram system is the highest perfection. That one will reach perfection, realize one's relationship with the Supreme Lord, go back to the spiritual world through following strictly the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. And that is the highest process, and one can attain liberation. That liberation, of course, for the devotees in the chain of Madhvacharya is one of the four Vaishnava liberations, to accept the same form or planet or association of the Lord, etc. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu differed that there is a process which is higher than that, and there is a goal which is higher. The goal of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not liberation. It's not considered, it can cripple pure devotional service to desire liberation. And therefore, the Kevala Bhaktis, or the pure devotees, they do not even desire liberation. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Nādhanam nājanam nāsundaram. Verse after verse, I only want your courses, devotional service. He doesn't care whether to get out of material existence. Birth after birth, he's not asking for liberation. The devotees are asking, when I chant your holy name, When will my voice choke up with ecstasy? When will there be love, symptoms of love? So the higher goal than liberation, even Vaishnava liberation, is development of prema bhakti. That is the desire of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They want prema bhakti in its highest forms. Not just liberation, even in the spiritual world, the spiritual planet. And whereas the process to achieve liberation is to follow the principles of Varnashram, the process to achieve prema bhakti, pure love of God, is shravanam, kirtanam, vishnismaranam, padasevanam. So to follow the nine processes of devotional service is considered to be higher than following the strictly the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system, where one may still have some upadhi or designation. So that is the difference, that as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we accept the highest goal of life to be prema bhakti, not just liberation. The best examples of that prema bhakti are the gopis. That was not understood by the Tathavadis. And the process of achieving that prema bhakti, following in the mood of the Vrajavasis, is shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting, remembering the pastimes of the Lord, rather than just following the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system. So that is the distinction between us and the strict followers of Madhvacharya. So some of the followers of Madhvacharya had not realized the conclusions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
So that brings me to the next question. Yes. Because
Chaitanya
Mahaprabhu is saying that the Srila Madhvendra Puri, who manifested before the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how did he get this knowledge by which he was able to differentiate what this Guru Maharaj is teaching to us, and give something higher than that in terms of prayojana and
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu planted the seed of the tree of love of God in the material world. That seed took the form of Madhavendra Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then became the tree of the pure Deity itself. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu planted the seed of his movement within Madhavendra Puri. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself became the tree of the pure devotional service. Without that, you know, seed being, you know, planted by the Lord himself, then it's not possible to have that understanding. And so, you know, therefore, you know, we worship Krishna, we worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the most magnanimous. You know, we were discussing the other week in Bhakti Shastri, discussing the nectar devotion, that only Krishna can give love of God. Krishna can give love of God on various different levels, and, you know, that very, very elevated, confidential level of love of God is very rarely given, even by Krishna himself. And sometimes when he gives the opportunity, even when he's present, he makes many, many conditions. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's extremely merciful that he gives this highest gift even to those who are the most unqualified and unfortunate. But only Krishna himself, whether as Krishna or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, can actually give any level of love of God. It cannot be attained any other way. Therefore, you know, as one becomes from the very beginning detached from the material world and feels, you know, let me give up material desires, and, you know, and these things are conducive to the path of devotional service, one must understand that that is the mercy of the Lord, you know, gradually planting the seed of love of God within one's heart, and just within time it will grow to that beautiful fruit of love of God which one will taste. So one, just as if you plant the seed of a mango tree, you become just as happy when that seed is in the ground, because you know that one day the fruits will be there. So even, you know, for Pingala, she could understand that, you know, the seed of love for God is there because I'm becoming detached from the material world. And the Lord is bestowing his mercy upon me. My material existence has come to an end. The Lord is taking me back to the spiritual world. These are all the understandings, even from the very beginning. Just like when one is going on a holiday, you know, even at the airport, you know, you're sort of bubbling over, oh, I'm going to India, I'm going, you know, you're just as happy, you haven't even got on the plane, but you're in ecstasy, you know, I'm going to the Holy Dharma, like that. You see, when someone is going to get married, even before they're married, you know, there's just a thought, you know, I'm engaged, or, you know, there was some contact, you know, I got a letter, an email, you know, there's something that happened. So, you know, this is the mood with Pingala, that she could understand. The mercy is there. This is the beginning of all good fortune. Gradually, the Lord gives that mercy in installments, increasing, just pushing, helping the devotee to reach that stage of love of God. Ourselves, as a tiny, tiny little jiva, will never get there. We will never get there. Without Krishna appearing and performing all his pastimes 5,000 years ago, without him coming as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, without him appearing as the spiritual master, without him appearing as the deity, without him appearing as the process of devotional service, as the Srimad Bhagavatam, and sitting within the heart of the super soul and constantly pushing and constantly guiding our life, there is no way in hell that we would ever attain pure love of God. Every little step of advancement we make is directly the mercy of Krishna. And therefore the devotees are always in ecstasy that here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this unlimited, you know, divine, powerful person, and I am this tiny little speck of dust, spiritual speck of dust, insignificant, lost somewhere in the material world, but that very kind Lord is personally taking my case to, you know, give me the benefit to go back to the spiritual world. And, you know, within, you know, very short time I will be back there. So that is, the devotee is always in ecstasy. Without that help from the Supreme Personality of God, it's just not possible to actually develop that pure love of God on any level.
I just want to ask one small question. How can we maintain hopelessness and truth at the same time?
It's like eating hot chutney, you know. It's just too hot to eat and too sweet to give up. So that's the nature of devotional service. It's an enigma. That's what makes it so ecstatic.
This is Prabhu's point. Generally, the mantras are very, very strict followers of Varnashram. Mm. So most of us could qualify to enter that sampradaya because they follow very strictly. Apparently, one of sannyasis in that line, he went over to America to preach and they considered it finished.
Because they
follow the Varnashram so strictly.
Sweet, yeah.
So it becomes a very elite sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to follow very strictly. So in terms of mood, this guy is kind of very liberal and generous and good. But the mantras are very, very strict. So it's, so for people coming from a lecture background, it's very hard to enter that line. It's practically we wouldn't qualify to get initiation on.
Even what to speak of the Vaishnava line, which is, you know, very elevated, but even to follow Sankaracharya, we wouldn't get a look in. The first qualification to actually be a follower of Sankaracharya is to take sannyas. That's where it begins. You know? And people claim, oh yes, I follow Sankaracharya. It begins with sannyas. Otherwise you haven't even started. So, you know, what to speak of, you know, the Vaishnavas who actually...
Yeah, so the members are generally...
Very strict.
They're very strict in the policy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, with Prabhupada. Prabhupada did go into the West and living with Malachas and, you know, preaching like that. It's not the mundane way of doing things. That's
Lord Chaitanya's mercy.
Yeah, giving mercy is the most form. It's obviously a long effort.
Yeah.
Very elite thing. And it's good they get the benefit of following the rules. Regulations are very strict, that there's benefits there, but the danger is always getting the elitism and pride, and that's also there for the mantras.
And there's no way to really spread love of God throughout
the
world,
massive
by life. Following that process.
A massive amount of qualified to follow Varnashram in a very strict fashion.
Any other comments? Sorry, more questions. Shabbat.